Good afternoon. It is 19 minutes after 5 o'clock. It is also Thursday, September 19th, 2013. I'm Ed Ronco with Raven News. School Board President Lon Garrison has served two terms overseeing Sitka's schools. This October, he'll ask voters for a third. Garrison, like many board members, was first elected when his kids were in school. Now that his daughters have graduated, he says he's following his passion and using experience in policy and legislative advocacy to make a good school district even better. KCAW's Robert Woolsey has this profile of school board candidate Lon Garrison.
While Lon Garrison may not always be the first guy out on the dance floor, he's not about to be a wallflower either.
If I'm going to do something, I'm going to participate.
Garrison runs hatchery operations at the Sitka Sound Science Center, which he joined after a long career at the Northern Southeast Regional Aquaculture Association. He's been active in Sitka folk, recruiting and promoting talent. Plus, he's the guy who comes out on stage in boots and a tweed vest and introduces the bands. But you don't have to attend many school board meetings to realize that he places a very high priority on this service, especially.
It just struck a chord within me, and I've found that I really have a passion for this. And I have met incredible people across the nation that have that same passion. And it's really interesting, it's challenging, and it's rewarding to work on that.
Over the past 6 years, Garrison has inherited the role of legislative watchdog, both at the state and federal level. He is a past president of the Alaska Association of School Boards, and he's a member of the National Forest Counties and Schools Coalition. He believes the idea of public education is threatened right now by a political push for school vouchers that's happening in the name of finances.
There's a huge emphasis right now in the state legislature to contain costs. And that comes from the governor, and that comes from the majority of the legislature, which is a Republican-controlled legislature. And they're looking at their revenues and where their money's coming from and dwindling sources. So when they begin to dwindle, then everybody starts scrambling for the last dollar.
At a candidate forum recently held by the Chamber of Commerce, Garrison mentioned that he was interested in strategic budgeting. The subject isn't as compelling to discuss as the role of technology in the classroom or how to fund activities, but it looms large for the board. The past two or three budgets have all been balanced by 11th-hour infusions of cash from the state or federal government. He doesn't think the district's luck can hold out indefinitely, and he wants to be ready.
Fortunately, we haven't taken a huge hit yet all at once. But we are so close to that happening at any given time now. It's a little scary, and that's why I really want to work towards a strategic budget plan. It gives us the opportunity to maybe anticipate that and have conversations with people about what's really important to them.
Garrison often has expressed an interest in educating the whole child through academics plus arts, extracurricular activities, and sports. But the board's significant investment in technology has been criticized as being inconsistent with these fundamentals. Garrison encourages the critics to think again.
Most of us use computers and software and communications on a daily basis that require us to use this technology to the best, to the most, you know, to be more efficient, to communicate well, and to say that we, you know, can't afford to do that in the classroom, it doesn't make sense to me.
Garrison is facing a challenger in this election, Stephen Courtwright, a teacher at Mount Edgecombe High School. Ironically, Garrison says a new voice and new vision are what he would ordinarily encourage on the board. Now, though, he believes stability and experience are the better choice.
I think so many things are changing. It's such a shifting field that the necessity, I think, actually to have experienced board members who are not static, who are not entrenched in the same philosophy all the time. I think I am a critical thinker. I'm willing to listen to people. I'm willing to understand, try to understand both sides of the issue, and sometimes to take risks. And I think those are important qualities that sometimes it takes time to develop that.
The municipal election in Sitka is Tuesday, October 1st. Garrison and Courtwright are vying for one seat on Sitka's five-member school board. It's a three-year term. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
The two school board candidates do have a difference of opinion on what to look for when hiring a new superintendent. You can find a link to that story and listen to the entire Chamber of Commerce candidate forum at our website, kcaw.org. Tomorrow, we'll profile candidate Stephen Courtwright during this newscast. and in the morning. The oldest operating hotel in Alaska will get a makeover on TV. The Travel Channel's new reality show, Hotel Impossible, will be in the capital city next week to film an episode on the Alaskan Hotel in Juneau. According to the show's website, each episode features a hotel that is having problems or is not living up to its potential. Hotel Impossible host Anthony Melchiori identifies problem areas and works with staff to transform the hotel. The Alaskan Hotel recently celebrated its centennial. It opened in September of 1913. The hotel was placed on the National Register of Historic Places in 1978. The current owners are Michael and Betty Adams. Hotel Impossible is employing two local general contractors while in Juneau, Alan Wilson with Alaska Renovators and Greg Stouffer of Stouffer Construction. Stouffer says he is getting paid to work on the show. He would not specify the amount, but says it isn't very much. This is not the show's first time in the 49th state. Hotel Impossible filmed an episode at Yakutat's Glacier Bear Lodge in September of 2012, which aired this past January. Pete Eads is the general manager of that fishing lodge.
They come in and they beat you up pretty hard and then give you some ideas of what to do.
Eads says Hotel Impossible updated Glacier Bear's website, bought the lodge space at travel expos on the East Coast, offered ideas on how to save on shipping costs, and renovated a room. Glacier Bear Lodge spent $100,000 to renovate an additional 10 rooms. Eads says up to 85% of the lodge's business is from returning clients every year. The occupancy rate of the lodge, he says, has only increased 1.5% since Hotel Impossible.
I know for a fact we've got maybe two or three reservations of people who saw the show and wanted to come to Alaska, but you know, they're talking about how it's going to just make the lodge go off the hook, and it did not do that.
Incidentally, Hotel Impossible is considering revisiting the Glacier Bear Lodge in Yakutat this weekend before traveling to the capital city. The television crew arrives in Juneau on Monday and will be there for a week. Residents in Petersburg are having trouble with aggressive sea lions. The huge marine mammals are approaching boats as they pull up to the dock, hoping for fish scraps and carcasses. The animals fall under the jurisdiction of the National Marine Fisheries Service, or NMFS, and local officials have asked that agency to remove one particular sea lion they consider a threat to public safety. But as KFSK's Matt Lichtenstein reports, federal managers are not quite ready to take that step.
As Assistant Regional Administrator for Protected Resources, John Curlin helps protect and manage marine mammals for NMFS in Alaska.
We don't want anybody getting hurt, and I understand that it can be a scary situation for folks. And, you know, we want to try to work with the community to find a good solution.
He recently spent a half day in Petersburg visiting harbor facilities and meeting with local officials and some harbor users concerned about one or more sea lions that have shown aggression towards people.
That was really helpful to hear from people firsthand about what they're seeing and what their concerns are. And that's it's that more than seeing sea lions themselves. It's that I was after in coming down here, is to get a sense from people of what their concerns are, and in particular, what changes they may have seen over the last month or so in this animal's behavior.
It's been a little over a month since the Borough Assembly permanently prohibited the discard of fish waste in Petersburg's inner harbors, though the Harbor Department posted signs banning the practice earlier in the spring. Curlin commended Petersburg for taking those steps.
I know it's not a new issue. I know some of the signage has been up in the harbor for a very long time. But people are being more vigilant about it now. And, you know, really that's – in the long run, I think that's what's going to lead to solutions here. I think it's going to be locally developed solutions, people figuring out what practices will work in just being safe, being smart, and not creating these risky situations that might prompt an unsafe encounter with an animal.
Around the time it finalized the fish waste ban in August, the borough asked NMFS to remove an especially problematic sea lion. However, the agency's not willing to kill that animal or any others at this point. Sea lions are a federally protected species. The law does allow the government to kill one if it threatens human safety, and NMFS has done that before in Petersburg. However, the agency has told local officials in this case it must first see that, quote, all reasonable efforts have been taken to eliminate food sources for a sustained period of time. And according to Curland, it hasn't been long enough since the fish waste ban was finalized.
Part of my concern is, you know, if if one sea lion were to be removed, but the sources of food continue to be available, there are plenty of other sea lions out there, and the situation could continue indefinitely. And, continuing to remove sea lions, I think that's not a good option in the long run. So ideally, what would happen is enough of a change in practices that sea lions would stick to their natural sources of food and not associate humans with food. And then you reach sort of an equilibrium, a kind of a coexistence.
Along with the steps Petersburg's already taken, Kurland and other NIMS officials have suggested moving fish cleaning stations upland and preventing sea lions from hauling out on the seaplane float. In the meantime, the borough still wants NIMS to take action sooner to remove one, possibly two sea lions that have been the focus of a lot of local concern.
We are continued to be really concerned that somebody's going to get hurt.
Borough manager Steve Giesbrecht was among the local officials and residents who met with Kurland.
That was asked last night by some of these people. It's like, is it going to take somebody getting hurt before NIMS takes action? His answer was no, it doesn't take that. But they need significantly more documentation before they're willing to take a lethal approach. That's disappointing to a lot of folks.
Giesbrecht says his staff is considering non-lethal deterrents like firing noisemaker shells at the animals. In Petersburg, I'm Matt Lichtenstein.